from the heart of downtown Winnipeg. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM.
You've tuned in to Truth Before Reconciliation with your host, Tammy Wolf, where we're building relationships and teaching truth before reconciliation.
Hi, you've tuned in to Truth Before Reconciliation, produced by CKUW 95.9 FM here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Treaty 1 Territory. I'm Tammy Wolf, the host, and I am back here with the second half of my interview with Erica Wilson. Welcome back, Erica.
Thank you.
So we just had a really great conversation talking about, Erica's connections in acting, being an actor, as well as what she likes to call a community connector, where she's wearing many, many different hats. We finished off our interview last day with talking about how you had done some facilitation and you had been working with youth and how Native Youth Program through Manitoba Theatre for Young People really gave you these really great opportunities as a youth, which I find just so inspiring, because that's why I asked you here to be with me today, is because I feel like the work, what you're doing, is really reconciliation in action, or what I like to call reconciliation. You're taking initiative to work with youth, build connections within the community, to really be spreading a positive message. So I wanted to talk a little bit about reconciliation and also the truth-telling process. So how do you feel like the work that you're doing as a community connector is tied to that, this still ongoing truth-telling process that we're in?
Yeah. I've always done work within Indigenous communities. I always stay true to who I am as an individual. And right. I always make sure that if I don't know the answer, whether it be cultural or anything to do with policy, I always make sure that I reach out. So right. I always make sure that I do my due diligence even before going into work.
Right.
And so for me, I'm always looking for opportunities where I am involved with Indigenous youth, that I am involved with Indigenous culture, and that I'm making sure that, like, I feel like the work that I'm doing and the people that I'm a part of and the projects that I'm doing align with my morals. And my right. morals are very strong. My morals are very strong in alternative learning, culture seeking, and self-identity, and like just finding a purpose.
Right.
So that's like the first step, even before I even decide to start working somewhere.
Right.
Does it align with me? Because it's my life. I need to make sure that when I am in my own life, that I am living it with people that I choose to be with. And
right.
It's taking me a very long time to work this up. I feel like in order to be in the mentality that I have, it's kind of a privilege. Some people don't
right.
get to choose their work. Some people don't,
right.
people don't have options to say, I don't want to work here anymore because it doesn't align with my morals.
Right.
That's sometimes not a realistic thing to say. And it's a very hard mentality. And I feel like with the right people, I've always been hired, because sometimes when I work with Indigenous people or community and stuff like that, you kind of need that stronger person or that stronger voice. Be
right.
like, no, this is not actually what I was taught in ceremony, or this wasn't what I was taught from an elder.
Yeah.
Like, I need you to talk to the elder, or you need to understand that what I'm saying doesn't feel right. So we need to change the criteria, or change
right.
how you're saying this, or is this actually done correctly? Or did you consult people? Like, being able to challenge those things and working with people and companies and communities that say, hey, you're right. And those are the type of people that I continue to work with. Are the ones that are like, we also want to learn. We are
right.
also here for those same missions and like ideas. And so that has taken me way beyond acting. And so it's taken
right.
me to different areas, and most of it to do with education and community and facilitation. It's been wild.
I think that's really inspirational. And then I feel like going back to, I mean, I guess what I'm hearing is that it's almost like a colonial mentality to me. I feel like society has conditioned us so much that we need to be 9 to 5. We need to be hustle and bustle. We need to be going Monday to Friday, back and forth to work, sitting in that dry cubicle, staring at that computer screen. And what I'm hearing from you is really community-based work is what Indigenous people are striving for, and going back to community and going back to ceremony and going back to our elders and going back to that, those connections, those places of belonging that we're all striving to be in, right? Is being, because a lot of that, you know, again, when going back to colonialism, that's what has disconnected us, right? Even when you were talking earlier about Manitoba Theatre for Young People, it's like, that's why I put my daughter in, was because I wanted her to have a sense of belonging, a place of belonging where she felt, you know, I'm a single parent and I felt like I was in programs when I was younger. And I felt like those are really good builders to try to connect with community and learn those, and what I heard you saying, these morals, these values, these ethics, and the ability to choose, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why should we sit in these 9 to 5 jobs where we're unhappy because we need to be there for a paycheck? Essentially, yeah. That's what colonialism dictates, right? Or I guess society, social norms, where we are now. So it is a privilege. It's wonderful to hear you say, you know, that you have this ability to be able to choose. But I almost feel like, again, going back to what I said earlier about purpose, right? As an Indigenous person, I do feel like that's where you need to go, is back to find your purpose. Essentially, what is your passion? What do you mm-hmm. feel empowered by? What do you feel? And I do feel Indigenous people also have like this need to like, I want to support change. I want to do something positive that impacts other people. So again, reconciliation. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I'm my best self when I am at service, when I'm helping people.
Right.
And also being helped. Like I realize sometimes like I need mentors, or I need support, or right. I need services, or I need, you know, I sometimes need things. And so I'm actually in the state where I am in right now, where it's like I need. Mm-hmm. I've done so many community initiatives in the last couple of years. I've been in so many projects, and I'm at the point where it's like, I need this now. So I'm taking a lot of time for myself, but like, in order to be a person that is a community member, that is a community support, that is out there with people, you need to be able to step back and be able to take care of your health and be able to do things for you. Because as much as like you're giving and you're helping, and you're in community and you're working with a lot of people, it's your energy that you're giving. And right. if there's an imbalance, then you'll feel burnout. But yeah, it's also like making sure that you're with the right people. The ones that like, you know, like, oh yeah, I can go for a hike, an 8-hour hike with her, and we'll still be friends after it. Kind of thing. It's like,
maybe get in the vehicle, see how 15 hours with just locked in a car together would be like.
yeah. And sometimes like when you're doing community work, if like, for example, you have to create 300 meals. Right. If you're in a kitchen with someone and it's really hot, you're going to have some sort of a good attitude, or be able to be like, we're going to get through this, or power through it. Or if you see someone that needs a break. Another. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If someone needs a break, go tell them to get water. You'll finish making the sandwiches, kind of thing. And just like knowing your balance. Yeah, I usually use like analogies, like kitchen work is the best one, because like, you know, there's a hot kitchen, there's cold, and like, you're going to be challenged with the elements. You have to stand on your feet. You have to move a lot. You have to communicate, or else you're going to get hurt. Like, it's like, yeah, it's all about sharing.
Yeah. To me, I'm just kind of getting like these hints of ceremony in what you're saying. Like organically, it's coming about. Like you want to feel in a place of balance, in a place of connection, of a place of shared space with somebody where you know, you shouldn't have to be saying, oh, well, I need a break, right? Where you're, when you're in the right space with the right people, those people will see that that's what you need, rather than having to be like, oh, I'm so hot, I need to get out of this kitchen. So yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And also, I feel like when you're around the right people and the around the people that you're working with or volunteering with, and if they're experienced enough, they'll show you that when you see someone else feeling that way, to like lend a hand kind of thing. Right. Like I found community work and community support to be the most beautiful teacher that I've ever experienced in my life.
Right.
Because I feel like it kind of brings you back to like understanding that we're humans,
right?
That we're all trying to find our purpose, that we're all trying to figure out what we're doing. And when you're surrounded by that many people, it's like, sometimes you forget to kind of like live outside your head. Like it's really easy to just like be in your head, live in your own reality. And so like when you're working in community, it kind of takes you out of your own shell, out of your own head. And it makes you see a bigger picture than yourself. And then that's when you realize you are part of a bigger picture. You're not alone, or you don't feel like you're alone because you're actively with other people. And like, yeah, that's where you find purpose, really, is like making sure that the world is bigger than you and you're part of that bigger world.
So I feel like, again, so many beautiful teachings. do you attend ceremony? Yes, I'm assuming that you do.
I do sometimes, yes. And it's also because like when I was a youth mentor for youth in the justice system for 2 years, over actually the whole pandemic I was. So I ended up taking on that role in the pandemic. And I found sometimes, like, especially with youth or people that, like, you know, are stubborn learners, you kind of have to teach them things in ways that they don't know that they're learning. And that's another thing that theater kind of taught me. Yeah. Theater taught me through games and through like cute little tasks or projects. And so I took the mentality of like almost like sneaky learning or fun learning kind of thing, and giving it back to youth and being like, oh, well, you can learn this way. Or I would try to relate to whatever their life was, or even relate to my life, like talking about kitchen work. I worked in kitchens for a while. Or talking about being in your inner world and then realizing, oh, I'm part of a bigger picture, is what I had to experience. I thought no one wanted me around, or I felt like I wasn't useful, or I felt like all these, you know, all these really negative things when I was younger, like no one really wanted me there. And then once I started working more in the community and realizing it didn't matter what the capacity that I had, as long as I was helpful and there, like people recognized it. Whether it's like my favorite tasks are like still cooking, or like cleaning up afterwards, or like making sure everyone has water. Like everything I have to do is around food. And that's what I love doing. Some people really love setting up, or there's a whole bunch of other, you know, there's security, like, again, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like there are different tasks, but I found like for me, I had to be the one running around or moving. That was just like how I was. And even that translates to the work I do, like coordination or something like that.
Right.
I was just moving. But yeah, it's very interesting. And that's why I chose to say myself as a community connector, is because every couple months my title changes. It changes companies, or it changes the capacity that I'm working at. But it's all the same. It's all the same job. It's just sometimes
it's reconciliation or reconciliation. Because you're supporting community by building connections in different areas with different people, with different goals.
Yeah. And then sometimes I share people. I'm just like, oh, I did this like 2 years ago. They'd be really good for this. Or like, I would like keep people in mind being like, I don't know how to do this, but I know someone that does. I'm going to bring them in. And just like having that directory of really amazing people. And because I was there supporting them, eventually, if I say, hey, I need support, they'll help me with whatever I need. Or I make sure that, like, if I see two really great people, they don't know each other, I make sure that they know each other.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's great. I feel like it's almost like that's how you know that's your purpose, because Creator has put things in your path prior, and then you're in this moment and you're like, oh, ding, ding. That's why 2 years ago I had that, you know, that experience or met that person or learned that skill, because now I'm utilizing that. And you just build on that, right? You're just building those blocks, and continuing to build them. So we're about halfway through, gonna wrap up here soon. But I did want to talk more so focused on, your thoughts on reconciliation. So where do you feel like we're at here now? Now we're in 2023.
I want to say, it's going to sound weird, but I'll explain. Well, maybe it's not that weird, but I feel like we're in still water.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like we're in still water and it's becoming dangerous. Just because, like, when all the speeches and research and everything about truth and reconciliation was happening in like 2007 to 2015, that was a huge initiative and a huge jump. And so, but yeah, I felt like there was a huge national shift when the language of truth and reconciliation came out. And while it was doing a lot of opening up dialogue and stuff like that, but it was also opening up a lot of wounds.
Right.
And so the truth and reconciliation actually did do a lot of harm when it came out. When people who were in residential school, 60 Scoop and the CFS system, when everyone had to nationally and publicly relive all of this, kind of created a lot of harm. And the what I'm speaking to is when they came out with the rubric of checkmarking what kind of abuse or experiences that they had in residential school to survivors.
Right.
And people who were sober for more than 15 years became a reuser because they had to relive their trauma and they didn't have proper individuals or care or community
or support
to teach them or to be there with them. And so while they were sharing all their experiences and they got a lump sum of money, they didn't know what to do with that lump sum of money. And so that was very disheartening and stuff like that. And also like the complete divide that it had in Canada and between the perspective of people who were Indigenous and Canadians.
Right.
And then you had another layer of people who were international students and people coming refuge to Canada and having this, like having these multi layers of everything that was going on and like the response of the UN and the UN calling it a genocide, but then Canada denying it was a genocide and it just being really confusing. Like it was absolutely confusing. And I was out of high school by that point. I think I was like 20. In 2015, I remember, but I remember it just being a lot. And I remember listening a lot because, I was never in residential school or anything. I was the last residential school closed in 1996.
Right.
So I was, two, so I was too young. But like growing up and listening to these kind of things and hearing about everything that was going on. And just having to listen because I didn't know everything. I didn't know what was going on, and slowly like being around people that were sharing with me, or I was learning about these things or learning about why I felt uncomfortable as a youth or why I felt like I was always being attacked for my skin color. Like it was a weird, weird, weird time.
Right.
And so now things have, and it was also celebrated. The truth and reconciliation was celebrated. It finally gave concrete levels of action. I'm not denying that it gave concrete levels of action. It gave Indigenous people and youth and educators and people who are learning new language to see the levels that things were going on. It was beautiful because you can't really grow or learn or contribute to conversation if you don't know the language.
Right.
And so that was great. But then now I feel like, because that big boom of information and sharing and confusion and messiness, I feel like now it's almost empty, because out of the 94 calls to action, less than 15 are implemented.
Since 2015.
The numbers have gone a little higher. When I was teaching a bit about truth reconciliation and the specific to the book and the Nine Nations, it was only 7 at the time,
right,
that were nationally implemented. And it took everyday companies. When I say everyday companies, I say like anywhere from medium corporations, longstanding nonprofits, educational systems, places like that. It took them a very long time to use this type of language in their workspaces or in their communities.
Right.
To finally have calls to action, to be conscious about truth and reconciliation, to have better conversations about Indigenous history and what happened on these lands.
Right.
And so for me now in 2023, I feel it's kind of still, because I don't see too much being progressed after that longer period of time. And so it kind of feels weird. I see a lot of great things that came out of it. So like, we have a lot more Indigenous content. We have a lot more Indigenous youth
representation.
Doing things. We have more people working and all this kind of stuff. But I still see a lot of things happening where reservations, like where, why isn't development happening at a quicker pace? If we already know everything that's going on, whether it's the slower style of education, the lack of completing your grades there, bringing revenue back, also having to hypervigilize and overshare and kind of have a trauma bond experience with your academic classes in order to get money for bursaries and supports. It's like, it feels backwards in the way, because as much as we want to move forward, there are a lot of spaces that are like, no, you still need to remind us of the past. You still need to tell us.
Like, that's part of the truth telling process.
Yeah. But it feels like, as much as like people want to move forward, having like, especially like youth who are in university, reshare all their traumatic experiences and re-explain what happened to institutionalized places that right. should already know what's going on is redundant. And so like,
agreed.
I do a lot of like grant writing and assessing and jurying and on arts councils and stuff like that. And one of the biggest things that I noticed is when we do Q&As with people, a lot of the people who are reviewing the grants are like, you don't need to tell us the history anymore about what happened in Canada or what happened to Indigenous people. We want to know what kind of art you're making. We want to know your purpose. We want to know what you want to learn in order for us to give you those grants. They're like, if people don't know already, then that's on them. And I really feel that's like my second part of how I feel about truth and reconciliation, is it has been around for so long and a lot of
education and awareness is over.
Yeah. And people are not learning about it anymore. It's just a common phrase now. Like, I'm speaking mostly because I work in live entertainment and film and all these different avenues. And so like giving land acknowledgements, like that's just something you hear now, but I don't think a lot of people who are not active on the land or in their community or in a community necessarily take that home with them. So
they don't know what it actually means.
Yeah. So like, for example, like I was in the Rocky Mountains for 10 days, a couple weeks ago. And while I've been to Canmore and Banff and like Louise and all these places, and like, I knew, oh, Siksika or Treaty 6 or Treaty 5, like,
shout out Siksika.
Yeah, Dakota, Stoney, like as much as I knew like the lands and the people's names, until I actually started investing my time in learning about the lands, hanging out with people, listening to the perspectives of what was there, I had no idea the history of the lands
right.
until I actively was there. And so now when I go to Banff or Canmore or go through the Rocky Mountains, I'm going to have a very different experience. And so that's when I think that like it takes a self-initiative to make sure that you understand the lands you're on and the history, because our educational system isn't doing it in a way that makes it feel like it's current. And so it makes it feel like it's in the past, and I'm not sure why, but
you need to be in my class.
Yeah.
That's one of the really good feedback that I get from my students, is that they say, I love the way that you create a connection between historical content and how it's still happening today, how it's current today. I agree so much with that, the fact that there is a lack of that in the education system. And I feel like it has to, like, don't get me started on education, but like curriculum development and like it needs to be redone. And like, let's take out some history books that aren't telling the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's strange because everyone thinks that's in the past. And so like, I try really hard to protect my energy and self now. So
right.
I don't actively try to teach anyone for the sake of teaching. I make sure that I protect my stories and my perspectives when I can. But one thing, if someone doesn't know, or I can see that they actually are arrogant or not willing to learn, one of the things I say was, too bad they didn't take people in residential schools when they were two, because I would have been in it. Just reminding them that like residential schools were a thing when I was born, and knowing that like we still have standing residential schools, we still have those buildings, and like those things happen. It's like people don't realize, it's like, oh, you think everything happened in the past? It happened when I was alive.
And well, one of the things that I often talk about, especially with like, because the 60s scoop is one of the things that has impacted my family personally. And that's, I just said this the other day, is that somebody had tried to say to me, oh, well, these are ancestral things. These are historical events that you're talking about. You need to move forward. And I'm all like, well, actually, my mother was born in 1964. And the 60s scoop was something that impacted my family. So when you're talking about a historical event, we're actually talking about an event that is still impacting myself, my daughter, my family, very much so in today's day. So this is not a historical event. This is a occurrence. This is something that's happening right now to me and my family. So I don't understand how you can sit and say that this is a historical event when it's very much not for me and my family. It may be for you, but not for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. I feel like I wish we had started talking about reconciliation sooner. People need to hear those things. People need to hear. And I especially feel like too, cause you are from the 90s, you're born in the 90s. And so, I guess a younger perspective than my perspective. I'm from the 80s. I'm an 80s baby. I think we are getting to overtime. So I do want to thank you, Erica Wilson, for being here today. Thanks so much, Erica, for taking the time to speak to the listeners.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love it. And thank you so much for allowing me to have the space to speak. Like, thank you.
No, I appreciate you so much. I feel like I've learned some things from you today. So thanks again, Erica Wilson, for being here with us. And thanks to the listeners for tuning in here on Truth Before Reconciliation, produced by CKUW 95.9 FM here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Treaty 1 Territory. I am the host, Tammy Wolf. I do hope that you come back next time. We're going to have another awesome guest. Thanks for tuning in to me and Erica Wilson today. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Listen to Circle One every Sunday at 8 p.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Sunday Night Punk with Spanky Boy, Mean Man, and Tanya.
In Canada's far north, you'll discover the tundra. Some tundra species live here year-round and must adapt to winters with temperatures as low as minus 50 degrees Celsius. Other animals migrate here during the summer, when plant life bursts from the soil. The tundra is home to many species at risk, like the barren ground caribou and Porcelled's bryum, a kind of moss. To learn more about the tundra, visit hww.ca. In Canada's far north, above the tree line and south of the ice caps, lies the tundra. Sweeping lowlands and towering mountains form the landscape of this epic ecosystem, and nature thrives here. Tundra wildlife must adapt to winters with endless nights and temperatures as low as minus 50.